We've heard a lot today about the days of unleavened bread. So, you know, one of the interesting things that I know in the past, when I was growing up, I used to hear a lot of sermons that were just about, I took bread out of my house and I threw it away, and then I was going through the week and I found a loaf of bread, and the whole sermon was about throwing bread out and then finding some bread. That was kind of about it. And, you know, I think we've seen and know and matured, and as we've heard, you know, this is not just the physical part. We do the physical thing. We put it out, and that can be quite instructive when you put the unleavened bread out and just what that process is like to do that. But it's really about the spiritual meaning of the day. It's about the bread of life, where Christ says, I'm the bread of life. He shall, you know, he who comes to me shall never hunger. And he says he's the bread of life, which came down from heaven. Anyone who eats that bread, he'll live forever. And we've heard this. This is what the meaning of the days are. It's not just that, hey, I put the bread out. It's actually the days of unleavened bread to eat each of the days, right? Each and every day. We think about the moving forward, as Tim was saying. Not just that you're forgiven, you put the sin out, but the moving forward and eating the bread of Jesus Christ every single day. So it's the spiritual principles that we look at for this day. But I'm not going to cover that. That's just a point that we understand. I actually want to cover something else. Why 7 days? Why 7 days? Why are there 7 days of this? You know, if you look at most of the holy days during the year, you know, they're held on one day, except for the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the Feast of Tabernacles. You know, each of these are 7 days, you know, and then the last great day for the Feast of Tabernacles. But why seven? Does doing this 7 days mean anything more to you than just doing it one day? Or is it just seven average, same old days to you? What are the 7 days for? What is it? Now, as we heard, Pharaoh, when Israel was brought out of Egypt, he did not want to let them go. Pharaoh pursued after them. God brought them out with a high hand, with a mighty hand, with power and strength. But Pharaoh was not going to let them go. Pharaoh was stirred up, and he went after them to pursue them, to overtake them, to destroy them, to try to bring them back. And if you think about this for you and I, when we think about spiritual Egypt that you and I have been brought out of, the spiritual Pharaoh will try to pursue you and bring you back. Spiritual Pharaoh today is going to pursue you and try to bring you back. And there's a battle that's described that one of the ways that he does that. And one of the things, just want to talk about one thing today and how it relates to the 7 days. One thing, and that is the concept found in 2 Corinthians 10. If you would turn back to 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3 through 6. When we think about this, is this Pharaoh coming after us spiritually, not wanting to let us go, there is a way that he does that. There is something that he does to get at us. When we talk about putting out sin and putting on Christ and overcoming and all the things that are about this day, this is one of the things we need to look at and take a look at. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3. It says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal." So we may look like, and we are in the flesh physically, we may battle people, we may battle issues, we may battle things that we can see, we think we see, but we are really not warring after the flesh of the things that we see. Our weapons are not carnal, which means they're not physical. We don't take up a sword physically and start swiping at things. We don't take a physical spear and throw it at somebody. These are not the ways that we have our warfare. They're not carnal. They're not like that. And if you think about this too, as a side note, if you think about Christ returning, you know, wielding a two-edged sword, that sword is all he has to do is to speak it. He can speak the words and say, you know, I battle you or you're this, because he speaks the words that we find later in Ezekiel and he brings people back to life. He can say that to take them out if he needs to. Our weapons are not carnal. They're not physical. We don't take up physical swords, but they're mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. Pulling down a stronghold, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. Now, the idea here that we need to think about and to talk about is this concept of a stronghold. What is a stronghold? How does that relate to 7 days? What is a stronghold in the first place? When you look at the word, it's a military term for a fortified place, right? When you see that mentioned in the Old Testament quite a few times, David would go or the enemy would go and they would hole up in a city in what they called a stronghold. It was fortified. It had walls. You couldn't easily take it. It was something that was built to be strong and built to be protected and not easily taken down. And in the sense that that means that in a physical sense, that's what is talking about here for a stronghold for you and I. When we have strongholds in our lives, it's the same type of a thing. The same type of a thing as a stronghold, something that has built up the walls, is very fortified, that is hard to take down, that is stuck, that is in there. And then what we find is it's for God has the weapons of our warfare are mighty in God. God gives us mighty weapons for pulling these strongholds down, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity. If you look at the language of this, it's the language of battle. It's the language of a fortress. It's the language of pulling the walls down. It's the language of taking things captive. Just like in a war, you would do that. You would take a city or a stronghold, you would go in, and you would take all the people captive. So the language and the imagery is very much the exact same thing. And God is saying that our weapons are not physical, but he's given us spiritual weapons that are mighty. And God, they're strong for pulling down strongholds, for taking these down. You know, a stronghold, if you look up the words, a castle, fortress, anything, you know, etc. But it's also related to a number of things here in the scripture because it's talking about arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God and also disobedience. So if we were to break this apart, we'll find that a stronghold, let me just give you, we want to describe the kind of three things that are in that scripture there of how a stronghold is described. First off, a stronghold would be something that is a sin where it's talking about, you know, ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is full. So sin, breaking God's law, not being obedient. A stronghold can be a sin that is stuck, that's ingrained, that's deep, that's there, that won't come down and won't go away, that keeps happening over and over and over again. How does a stronghold get built? When we think about it in relation to sin, it's little by little. And the way that Satan works as he pursues you, as Pharaoh of this world tries to pursue you, as Ephesians 4:26 says, don't give the devil a foothold. What's a foothold? It's a small place where he takes up a piece of occupancy, right? A small part. Well, I let that in. In this context, it was in the context of anger. Anger is a big one that is an open door by which Satan can take a foothold with us. Therefore, it's really important for us if we think about things. It's not just, hey, I have to, you know, obey the word, but there's a reason why that God gives us these things, and there's a foothold. We don't want to give a foothold. If you think about the Normandy Beach invasion in World War II, it's a perfect example of what we're talking about. All right, the Allies tried to establish a beachhead. They had to land, and you've also, you know, you've seen all the different movies that depict this idea, Saving Private Ryan and things like that, where they land and they're trying to get up where there was a strong fortress and in a beach that was held, and they had to get in there and a great loss of life, work their way in and get basically a bit of a foothold. And then once they got a little bit in there, they could work their way up and then all the way into it. And this is the idea when you give a foothold. You give a little opening, and what happens is Satan wants to step in on that and establish a whole beachhead and then expand that out. And then pretty soon what he's done is he's built a fortress in there. He's built a fortress in there with high walls, something that would be called a stronghold. And he does that by little bit of sin by sin. So we think about this day and think about it in relation to strongholds. This is something to think about staying away from or avoiding sin, is that because it gives the devil a foothold. You know, like the beach invasion, a little bit in, so we can start to build something that has high walls inside. Now, another thing that a stronghold could be, If you turn to Proverbs 21, 22, Proverbs 21, verse 22. So a stronghold could start with a sin and be something that is ingrained and built and tough to get rid of. You know, a lot of times that's in the forms of addictions and things like that that are very, very hard to shake. Those become a stronghold. High walls, not easy to take down. Another type of a stronghold is found here in Proverbs 21, 22. It says, a wise man scales the city of the mighty and brings down the trusted stronghold. And the language there is trusted stronghold. This is something that's an object of confidence for you. Something that you have confidence, hope, trust in. Something that gives you security that's not of God. But wait, does God not want us to be confident people? Of course he does. But this is the idea that you're trusting in something beyond him as your security. That could be a number of things. It could be your riches. It could be a position you have. It could be a job. It could be a number of things where you've built something where you take and you trust in. And that's what the language is there, is a trusted stronghold, something I have trust in, that I put my confidence in, that's not of God. It's my stronghold. The same language is used when talking about God making God your stronghold, though, too, if you think about it, if you trust in God and make him your stronghold. But here, a wise man scales the city of the mighty and brings down the trusted stronghold, something that they trusted in. Anything that gives you confidence in yourself outside of God exalts itself against the knowledge of God. It is something you're trusting in to give you security like that. So an object of confidence that gives us security could be another type of a stronghold. And God a lot of times will bring those down or take those down and let us lose those. That's happened to a lot of people I know. You can lose something, a job, something that you trusted in that was all about you and who you are and everything else. And he can take that. It sounds cruel, but God is helping us to learn to trust in him and take down something that's not our own confidence. And then the third type of thing that a stronghold could be is found in Ephesians 6:13. Ephesians 6 and verse 13. Ephesians 6, verse 13. We find more language of battle here. More language of battle and strongholds. Ephesians 6, verse 13 to 18. It says, therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. And having done all, to stand, stand therefore. It's actually a command. It's kind of written a little bit odd there. But it should be, after having done all to stand, stand. You stand up. Therefore, having your waist, girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, and above all, taking the shield of faith, with which you're able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplications in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. One thing I want to hone in here is fiery darts. Another tool, when you think about a stronghold that gets fired either into or out of, is a fiery dart. And these are talking about fiery darts of the wicked one. And the idea of a fiery dart, if you ever seen a movie, it's where they take an arrow and they dip it in tar or some other flammable thing. They dip that into or light it up into fire. And then they shoot that, or shoot a whole raft of those. And the idea is that if you as an enemy are looking at a fiery dart, you're going to see something coming to you. And people who have had these shot at them say, when you're looking at it, it's really hard to tell where it's going to land. You know, the fire's going like this, and it's waving in the air. And what happens is it causes people to lose heart and run is what happens. Because, you know, if you ever get struck by one of those, not only do you have an arrow in you, but now you have fire and something flammable on you that, you know, burns. And so this was something, a fiery dart, fiery arrow shot, and you see rafts of these coming at an enemy, causes the enemy to lose, panic, to run. This is what is described as what Satan shoots at you and I. Shoots at you and I is a fiery dart. Now, a fiery dart can turn into a stronghold because it's all about, in this context, ideas. Things that he's firing at you, thoughts about you, things that stick and land, they fester, They burn. They work on your brain and your thoughts. You know, these thoughts can be haughty, or they can be self-destructive. It's the same type of thing that he's shooting at us. Haughty means, you know, Satan shoots and it lands like, you know what? You deserve more. You should be more. You should, and goes through that side of pride, and appealing to pride can be a fiery dart that gets in there. And pretty soon I've seen people completely ruin their lives over a thought like that that gets embedded, and they think they deserve so much more, and they end up doing so many different things and acting out of it, and all you see is pain and destruction with it. Or it could be the other type of a fiery dart, one that goes and sticks and lodges in you, that's some words about you. You as a person, you know, it's some word about you. You know, he really cares about everybody else, but he doesn't care about you. Or you as a person or something, you are flawed. And look, you can probably see you are flawed. Things that go contrary or exalt themselves are ideas that aren't contrary to what the Bible says about you. When he says, you're my son or my daughter. Or you know, I'm the one who be the author and the finisher of your faith. And all the things that the Bible would refute, these ideas get shot at us, and they stick sometimes, don't they? Sometimes they lodge, and sometimes, oh no, I got a fiery dart, and it's burning, and I left it there. And pretty soon, over time, those fiery darts, if you have that, turn into an idea that becomes so entrenched that you think you are a certain way. You know who does that to you? It's not God who's doing it like that. Satan wants to. When we say that the Pharaoh is chasing you, this is a way that he chases you. Fiery dart, shot, stops, lodges, burns, grows, becomes something that's stuck inside of us and becomes a stronghold. You know, a lot of times these are things we don't verbalize out loud to others. So maybe these are just things that we struggle with, you know, inside. But it's interesting, too, that the antidote that we see is the armor of God, but specifically the shield of faith. The shield of faith you have to raise against these things. You know, a shield in battle would take an arrow and stop it, wouldn't it? You have to raise that shield. You have to have faith as that shield, which says, you know, this fiery dart has landed. Maybe it's self-destructive, and I'm bringing myself down, and I just think, you know, it's not for me. You know, I feel like this is for everybody else, but it's probably not for me. And you don't verbalize that, but you have that inside your thinking for years and years and years. Faith says, I will read the Bible, what it says about me, and trust that. Trust the being who says that. My faith is towards the being who says that. I will just have to read the Word of God and to believe that versus what just got shot, what got lodged, and what is stuck there as a stronghold inside. And I don't mean to minimize these things, because these things are very powerful weapons that are used against us. But what does it say? God gives us powerful weapons that are powerful for the bringing down of strongholds. The bringing down of a stronghold means that any one of those things that we've talked about, a sin that is stuck, that's committed, that can't come out, that's hard, or an addiction, or things like that, or something that you take security and confidence in yourself. Or an idea, a fiery dart that's stuck and turns into something that it just becomes who you think you are and lodged and very strong. God says there that he gives us weapons that are very mighty for pulling down of strongholds, pulling them down, pulling down the stronghold and getting rid of them. When we think about that, I don't know about you, but there's probably a lot of things that, you know, we grapple with in life. Maybe we don't talk about them, or maybe we think, hey, I feel like I have something like you're describing that's been a part of me forever. I just thought it was me. You know what? It's probably a stronghold. And one of the things to think about here during the Days of Unleavened Bread is, how about addressing the strongholds, those things? Not just, I've got 7 days, I'm eating some bread and doing stuff. But what about those big things in life that are stuck? The Days of Unleavened Bread, 7 days. Why do we have 7 days? One of the reasons is that it's a pattern, and we'll see in a second, that we can address strongholds. This is the time in life to think about that. This is the time in life not to go through another year and say, you know, I'm just going to keep that thinking that I have. Instead, it's a time to address it. So what does it have to do with 7 days? What does it have to do with 7 days? What does the number 7 signify in the Bible? I think I heard somebody say it's used to mean completeness or completion, something that goes through the process and finishes, completes. We have the 7 churches, the 7 angels to the churches. We have 7 trumpets that take place. We have 7 last plagues. We have 7 seals, 7 thunders. We have 7 days to create the heavens and the earth, start to finish, to create. We have 7 days of the week, right? We have the start of the week. We have the finish of the week, God says, and a start and a finish, a completion. We have 7 holy days. There were 7 major divisions of the Bible, law, prophets, writings, gospels, and acts, general epistles, epistles of Paul, revelations. All of these things signify, when you think about it, something starting and something finishing and being completed. Other examples in the Bible, there's tons of examples around 7. Moses waited on Mount Sinai till the 7th day before God spoke to him. Period of time of waiting. At one time, the armies of Syria and Israel camped opposite each other for 7 days before engaging in battle. On another occasion, the army of Israel took a roundabout journey of 7 days on the way back. Job's friends sat with him for 7 days before they spoke. Ezekiel sat in silence for 7 days when transported to the exiled Israel. There's a whole bunch of things that we see as a start and a finish of a period of time of something. And the idea of 7 is the idea that something is completed. There's a start and there's a finish and there's a process that happens there. So what does 7 mean for these days in the context of strongholds? Well, we have an example in the Bible that answers that very thing I just asked. What about 7 days? What about strongholds? And what does it do with completion? And how is it a tool that God gives? I think what we have listed in the Bible is an interesting example of bringing down a stronghold and how God does it and how it relates to 7 days. Can you think of what that is? This example is a physical stronghold, but there's a spiritual reality that's about it. And this is the way God works. Now, what's that city? That is the city of Jericho. Let's talk about Jericho for a second. I have one slide I'll put up here. The idea of Jericho was that this was a very fortified city. It was a huge stronghold. When we look at the city of Jericho, it was something that was a fortress, a walled fortress. This is kind of, if you look at a cross-section, this would be what the walls would generally look like. You can see on the top, there's a wall up at the top of the bank, right? So we had this very sloping ground. We had a wall that was, you know, super high at the top, 12 to 15 feet. At the bottom, you have something that is a wall against the ground made by the mud bricks, 6 feet thick, and about 20 to 26 feet high, right? So what you have, if you can see people down at the bottom, those would be kind of to scale of people. They made this fortress or this stronghold of Jericho to be something that there's just impenetrable. So you would have to not only, you know, get over and scale up that 20 to 26 feet high. That's super, super tall, high walls in the day. You'd have to tear that down, break that down. But then you had sloping ground that went up, and then you had another wall that, you know, went up from there and had another height. If you think about how they could protect that, once they were under siege, all the people, if you're out in the grass during the day or whatever, would go back inside the inner wall there. And this was the city of Jericho, basically how it was set up. And so the people of Jericho were, you know, haughty. They knew that there's no way you're getting in there. Apparently around this time of year too, well, they had a spring of water inside the city too, so they had water that was going fresh, no problem. And the time of year that this was, they had probably just finished the harvest of all the food, which means they probably had grain and all kinds of food stored up inside that city that could last 2 or 3 years. So when you think about people coming against a city like this, Israel was faced with this. And this is a city that couldn't be taken. This is the definition of a stronghold. You couldn't take this city. You couldn't bring it down. The walls, just getting over those walls, getting inside there, you'd be shot down. You'd be shot with fire arrows, darts, or whatever would happen. So this city of Jericho was one that was impenetrable. This was a stronghold. This is a definition of a stronghold, right? Now, they've excavated the site of Jericho, just as an interesting side note. You know, for archaeology, they've done some excavations here. And they have found, like, just piles of wall, you know, bricks and things that have kind of, where the wall should be, it's all fallen down or fallen over. And they've also seen that it's burnt. And they see, like, even a part of the wall that's still intact, a small part. And if you read the Bible account, the way they've been excavating this, they're proving that what the Bible says, they've actually seen it to be in real life. They've seen that when they, you know, find the ruins of this. So this place, if you were to come here with an army, you're not getting in. How do you do this back in the day? You have to build up big ramps and throw things over and try to break at the wall. And, you know, it's easy thing from the vantage point up high down low, when you think about it militarily, there's an advantage to being up high. You can easily take care of people down below. So you're not only on the ground, you got a huge wall to surmount, and then it's uphill from there, and people, you know, fortressed up there. This place you're not getting into, and this is what Israel was faced with. But God gave the victory with this. And it's God's pattern of how he does it. And what we find here is described as a pattern, if we want to look at the description of this whole thing, is how God does it. This is how God does it. Let's turn back to Joshua 6 verse. We'll read the accounts here of Jericho and them taking the city. Jericho, them taking this impenetrable city. You can't get into this. Something to notice as we read this too is how many times the number 7's in here. How many times the number 7 is in this account? So Joshua 6, verse starting in verse 1, says, "Now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. Nobody went out, and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, 'See, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king, and the mighty men of valor.'" The first thing to notice about this account, when we talk about God's tools or weapons, is God declared the victory up front. Notice that. God declared the victory up front. He says, look, was the city still sitting there? They could see it? Yes, right there, they could see it. He says, but look, I have given, past tense, I've already given this to you. I've already given you the victory. The Jericho into your hand, its king, and the mighty men of valor. This is something, when we think about God's tools and weapons, and we talk about faith and the shield of faith, is you have faith in that God who declares victory for you. He declares victory for you. Did the city just fall down for nothing? Did they have to do something else? Yes. But he declared victory for them from the very beginning. Think about that. You want a pattern during his holy days to think about. God will say to you, I have given you victory over something. I have already given it to you. He's declaring that. Why is he declaring that? Because he's the one who can do that. Has it all taken place yet? Has not. And this is where 7 days comes in. This is where a time period comes in. But you have a God who is the God who could take this down and declare it right from the beginning for you, with your sin, with your stronghold. I've given you victory over this, or I will give you victory over this ahead of time. That's the faith that you can have. That's the person that you have faith in. You'll notice God says that to them. But they had to do things. They had to do things. Right? Verse 3, it says, "You shall march around the city, all you men of war, and you shall go all around the city once. And this you shall do for 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of rams and horns before the ark. But the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. It shall come to pass when they make a long blast with the ram's horns, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout. Then the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up, and every man straight before him." Go up, right? Up that embankment. "And Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said to them, 'Take up the ark of the covenant, and let the 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord.' And he said to the people, 'Proceed and march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the ark of the Lord.'" So victory is determined ahead of time. But they had to do something. And that's the interesting part. They had to do something. They had to march around the city once each day for 6 days, just march around. And then on the seventh day, march around that stronghold 7 times. And then when they blew the trumpet, the horn, then the walls, in a shout, then the walls would fall. So verse 8, so it was, when Joshua had spoken to the people, that the 7 priests bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets. And the ark of the covenant of the Lord followed them. And the armed men went before the priest who blew the trumpets. And the rear guard came after the ark, while the priest continued blowing the trumpets. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout. Then you should shout. That's interesting instruction there, I think. Why? What would words and noise being said during the 6 days be? What would it be? It would be maybe people up on the wall of Jericho heckling, talking to you, goading you, saying something. And then what would it be? It would be you replying back, saying, we're going to get you. We're going to, you know, it'd be all about you, wouldn't it? This is not all about you. This is not about you doing that. This is your faith in the God. This is the instruction of God was to say, don't say anything. Don't shout. Don't be yelling. Don't be, we're coming after. We're going to get you. Because their faith is not in themselves and what they're doing. It wasn't the walking around that caused the walls to fall. It was God who would cause the walls to fall. And he gave them explicit instruction at the end. You shout. That wasn't then again like, yeah, we won. That is instruction from God, the way he says to do it. Don't make any noise with your voice. This is not us, you know, heckling and saying and going back, or I'm going to do it, or it's my own strength and my own power. This is 100% knowing who is going to give that victory and listening to what they say and how to say it. And keep going on. It says, so he had the ark of the Lord circled by the city, going around it once. Then they came into the camp and lodged in the camp. And Joshua rose up early in the morning, and the priest took up the ark of the Lord. The 7 priests bearing 7 trumpets of ram's horn before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with trumpets. And the armed men went before them, but the rear guard came after the ark of the Lord, while the priest continued blowing the trumpets. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. And so they did. It was 6 days. Not saying anything. No words. No things like that. No boasting. No taunting. No anything. That's not how this works. In verse 15, it came to pass on the 7th day that they rose early. And about the dawning of the day, and they marched around the city 7 times in the same manner. And on that day, only they marched around the city 7 times. And the 7th time it happened when the priest blew the trumpet that Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, it and all who were in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who were with her in her house, because she hid the messengers that were sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed. Like, don't pillage, don't take the stuff, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the gold and silver and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord, and they shall come into the treasury of the Lord. So verse 20, when the people shouted, when the priest blew the trumpet, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall just fell down. The wall fell down. Then the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. And they utterly destroyed that which was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, sheep and donkey, the edge of the sword. This stronghold fell down, but utterly taken out and destroyed. And Joshua said to the 2 men who spied the country, go into the, you know, harlot's house, Rahab, and from there bring out the women, all she has, etc., etc. And they burned the city and all that was in it with fire, and they took, you know, it's like they said. And they, like I said, when they excavate the site, they find just the description is played out in archaeology that sounds like this account. Walls falling down, bricks piled up, things burned, you know, etc. But why did we read that? This is a very interesting thing. This is what? This is a strong weapon that God has done and given, doing it God's way. 7 days. Right? How do these things come together? This is a stronghold that is being brought down. This is how God says to do it. This is not by your power. They're declaring you the victory to start, but you must go do. You must circle that stronghold. Every day. On the seventh day, circle that stronghold 7 times. If you want to think about this from a spiritual standpoint, there's a very interesting model there. There's a very interesting model of bringing down something that is impenetrable and is stuck and can't go away by doing it God's way with his weapons and not our way with our weapons. 7 days it took. 7 days to complete the process. It is a process that happens. It is a time period that happens. And it is done by the power of God, not by us. So question for you. Have you faced your own Jericho and given up? Do you have a Jericho that you can't surmount? Is there something in your life that is like that, that you cannot scale the walls and you cannot bring it down and you have tried and you have tried and you have tried? Is there something that is your Jericho? The days of unleavened bread are 7 days, and it's a perfect model and time to think about bringing down your Jericho with God's tools that are mighty weapons for the pulling down of strongholds spiritually. Not just 7 days. Hey, I woke up and great day, had some unleavened bread and dealing with my sin. Every day is kind of the same thing. What happened here? There was a focus on this. There was a focus that God said deliberately to do 7 days around Jericho to bring it down. There happens to be 7 days in the days of unleavened bread to deal with sin. Is there not? It's the exact same time period, the exact same model. I ask you this, do you have a Jericho you haven't brought down in your life yet? Is it a sin you can't get rid of? Is it an idea that has stuck and lodged and you can't get rid of it? You can't shake it. It affects your entire being and everything you do. Let us think, if there is, of following this pattern during the holy days. How do you circle it? How do you circle it? First of all, you have to recognize there's a Jericho. Right? You have to recognize there's one. Think about it. Do you have a Jericho? 2, know that God has declared victory for you by his way and his tools ahead of time. But 3, you have to do something to circle it. You have to do something to circle it. These armies walked around it each day. If you want to think about that spiritually, walk around your Jericho in prayer. Maybe you bring an army with you. They had an army, didn't they? Maybe you have a few people that you want to be involved with this, to walk around that Jericho with you during the days of unleavened bread. Circle that. Pray about that. The next day, same thing with your army of prayer. Know you have a Jericho. Circle around it. Pray it. There is a focus on saying that God is going to give me a victory. There is a focus on doing and moving how God said and circling that, thinking and circling. Praying about it, looking at that. And then on the seventh day, intense focus, circle it 7 times. And what we find is a pattern that the walls fell down. God gave a victory. So why is there 7 days? What does that have to do with strongholds? It very much has to do with the pattern that God gave with Jericho. Physical stronghold, but a spiritual pattern. Think about that. I don't know if we've thought about that sometimes in life. We think, oh, I'm just working on the sin, working. Sometimes, maybe we should jump and tackle with God's weapons the way he says to do something that's a stronghold. And 7 days of unleavened bread, not just 7 ho-hum days, all the same, but 7 days of intense focus of circling that, and 7 times on the seventh day. That's how you bring down a stronghold. God gave us weapons. I think sometimes we first have to admit we have them. And we need to ask ourselves, and this is one of the things as we think about this, and this is why I give this at the beginning, is do you have a Jericho that needs to be brought down? You have 7 days before you. You have an army that could be with you. you have a pattern in the Bible, and you have something that start to finish can complete that, and God who can declare the victory for you, but you still have to do something. You still have to do something. So is there something in you and I need to do? A sin, an addiction, something stuck, an idea, something that makes you haughty, something that makes you self-destructive. Is there something in there that's an idea that's lodged and is stuck and has built up and has made walls like that inside you? Then this should be a victorious time. Think about the days of unleavened bread as a victorious time that God can give you. Not just seven ho-hum days of eating bread, but a victory over a stronghold. God can give you that. And that's the pattern that he shows us in the Bible. Not our weapons, not our ways. God's weapons are mighty, and his ways are different. And he shows us pattern after pattern of how to do that. So why 7 days? Why 7 days? Because there's a time period of overcoming and putting on Christ. Not just instantaneous. There's a time period. Philippians 1, verse 6. I'll just read this as one last scripture here. Philippians 1, verse 6. What is our confidence in our high hand? It's not in our ability, but it says, Philippians 1, 6, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. He who has begun a good work will 7 days it with you. Completion. He'll 7 days it with you. That's what you should know by these days. He will complete it. He will complete or 7 days it with you until the day of Jesus Christ. There's a time period, but what he has started, he has declared victory for you, and he will finish. There should be a huge amount of rejoicing, the high hand, the coming out, not because we're so great, but what God has declared and what he can do. And just reading things like that, despite the fiery darts and anything that may have built up. And what's the other reason why it's 7 days? Because strongholds in our lives and our mind will take a time period to get rid of. It says, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty in God for the pulling down of strongholds. So I ask you one more time, do you have a stronghold in your life? Is there a Jericho in your life? Is there something that needs to be pulled down? Think of the holy days differently. You have 7 days. You have a pattern. You have a God that's declared victory who can bring down an impenetrable fortress if we do it with his tools. So let's do that and think about that during these holy days.